Welcome to Themis Podcasts. Themis is an award-winning platform that helps our clients and community manage their financial crime risk exposure. We aim to democratize due diligence through our AI-powered AML and KYC platform, our expert research and insight into emerging financial crime threats, and our deep dive intelligence for enhanced due diligence. Find out more at wearethemis.com.
Well, hello, this is Henry Williams from Themis. I'm head of investigations at Themis, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Cindy Gallup. Cindy describes herself as the Michael Bay of business because she likes to blow shit up. And I think she's had an illustrious career where she's demonstrated that, from being chair of Bartle Bogle Hegarty to, in 2009, founding the website Make Love Not Porn. Cindy is now in the middle of a funding round for Make Love Not Porn and has come across some quite interesting characters in this raise. And we're, again, delighted just to be joined by her, and she's to tell us more about her business and about this latest funding round and some of the financial crime risks which get posed in this particular industry. So thanks very much for joining us today, Cindy.
Very pleased to be here, Henry.
Fantastic. So I guess probably the first thing I'd like to ask is, what was the thinking behind Make Love Not Porn? How did you find yourself in this industry?
Sure. So I have a business that is an accident, because I never consciously, intentionally set out to do anything I very bizarrely find myself doing now. Make Love Not Porn came about because I date younger men. They tend to be in their 20s. And about 15, 16 years ago, I began realizing, through dating younger men, that I was encountering what happens when two things converge. And I stress the dual convergence because most people think it's only one thing. I realized I was experiencing very intimately and personally what happens when today's total freedom of access to hardcore porn online meets our society's equally total reluctance to talk openly and honestly about sex. When those two factors converge, porn becomes sex education by default, in not a good way. And bear in mind, Henry, this is 15 years ago when nobody was talking about this. Nobody was writing about it. This was me in isolation as a naturally action-oriented person going, wow, if this is happening to me, it must be happening to other people. I want to do something about this. So 14 years ago, I put up on no money, purely as a little side venture, a clunky website at makelovenotporn.com. But in its original iteration was just words. The construct was porn world versus real world. Here's what happens in the porn world. Here's what really happens in the real world. So today, Make Love Not Porn is pro-sex, pro-porn, pro-knowing the difference. We are the world's first and only user-generated, 100% human-curated social sex video sharing platform. We are a unique window onto the funny, messy, loving, wonderful sex we all have in the real world. We are socializing, normalizing, and destigmatizing sex, bringing it out of the shadows into the sunlight to promote consent, communication, good sexual values and behavior. We are literally sex education through real world demonstration.
One of the things we had this week was, it was UN Sustainable Development Goals and Flag Day. And I just wondered, that's such a driver for global business, particularly what you talk about in terms of doing good with business. And, you know, I think so much of to do with sustainable development goals is, you know, is the enhancement for the sort of female community around the world and bringing them into the workforce and ensuring that labour is properly looked after. I was just wondering if there was any of the sustainable development goals which are sort of covered by Make Love Not Porn so much.
There absolutely are. Because what we do, so at Make Love Not Porn, as a unique business, we have unique capability. We have the power to change people's sexual attitudes and behavior for the better in a way that nothing else can. And we have 10 years of proof of concept. And very importantly, ultimately, our mission is to help end rape culture globally. We help end rape culture by doing something incredibly simple, but nevertheless, nobody else is doing. We help end rape culture by showing you how wonderful, great, consensual, communicative sex is in the real world. Our social sex videos role model good sexual values and good sexual behavior. And importantly, we make all of that aspirational versus what you see in porn and popular culture. And the reason I'm sharing that, Henry, is because a critical part of, you know, the UN Sustainability Development Goals is the empowerment of women and girls. And women and girls are held back all around the world because of rape culture, because of sexual harassment, abuse, rape, that basically leads to massively unequal opportunity, keeps women and girls back in all sorts of ways in terms of the sustainability goals. So yes, you know, we are a very important conduit to achieving those.
Fantastic. Well, I think that sort of brings us very neatly then onto the next question in terms of when you're talking about investors and scaling this business and everything. And so you are in the middle of a funding round at the moment, I understand. And you were coming across some various investors, and which is why obviously you've now found yourself talking on a financial crime podcast. But I'd just be interested just to understand a bit more about your experience, perhaps as a female founder, looking to source investment, and how this led you down to this particular caper.
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, Henry, I represent the triple whammy of unfundability. I'm female, I'm older, and I have a sex tech business. I have enormous challenges raising funding, which is why, you know, I have managed to keep Make Love Not Porn operational for over 10 years on just $3 million of funding from one investor, which is an extraordinary feat. And by the way, all my own savings and, you know, everything that, you know, I've made, as you can imagine. I'm now working to raise a serious round of funding, because it's about time. I'm working to raise $20 million to scale the core business and to build out a number of product extensions for a product roadmap I've absolutely had since day one, but only now I'm finding investors who get it. And I've been frankly blown away by the amount of incoming investor interest that I get on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is my number one investor lead generator. But this will explain, Henry, why, you know, the vast majority of my investor dialogues come to me, you know, because they have come across an interview with me somewhere, they've seen a post on LinkedIn, they get it and they reach out. So it was not unusual back in May to get an email out of the blue. And this email was so nonspecific that actually initially, you know, I thought it was spam and nearly deleted it on site. Then I read it more carefully. And I'm going to share, for our listeners' benefit, I'm sharing the story of a scam. Spoiler alert, I did not get scammed, thank goodness. But in the interest of making sure that nobody else does, I'm going to share the names, the websites, everything that I encountered. I want our audience just to be aware that the names are all fake. And I wrote to LinkedIn straight after I realized what was going on and asked them to delete all the fake profiles, which they've now done. The websites are spurious, but I am going to provide the identifying details, fake though they are, in the hope that that might help anybody else being approached by these people. So this email purported to come from a woman called Kylie Ortega, who is the creative director of a Liechtenstein-based consulting firm called Alset Consulting. And the email said something along the lines of, I'm writing to you because we have a client who is interested in funding a venture in the adult entertainment industry. You know, we think, you know, your business could be a fit. Are you raising funding? You know, how much are you raising? Can we talk? Now, this email was very nonspecific. And so I don't think, looking at it, that it was specifically targeting me. I think it was targeting a number of people operating in adult and sex tech, probably because the scammers would know that there are obvious challenges raising funding in that scenario, but B, also possibly because their hope would be that people in that area would be more desperate for funding and more prepared to overlook, you know, safeguards. So I replied and said, sure, happy to talk. I then completely forgot about this. Several weeks went by, I heard nothing. And then Kylie Ortega popped back up out of the blue in June on email and said, you know, I'm sorry, I've been very caught up with work. You know, I'd love to talk. Can we do a call? So we did a voice call through WhatsApp. And, you know, she asked me all about Make Love Not Porn. So I talked her through the business. She said, you know, this is very interesting. I think this fits, you know, our client's brief. Our client wants to, you know, invest in a company of this nature. He wants to take a 20 to 30% stake. He doesn't want to be the majority shareholder. You know, and by the way, all of this dialogue was relatively credible in terms of the questions you get asked when someone's contemplating investment. I obviously said, who is this client? You know, and she said, you know, he wants to be anonymous for the time being, and he actually wants to invest anonymously. But, you know, depending on how this dialogue develops, we will obviously tell you, you know, are you okay to sign an NDA? And then can you send us your investor deck? So I went, sure. And it's worth noting that, unfortunately, with a sex tech venture, the desire to invest anonymously is something I come across, you know, regularly. I mean, our original investor has been amazingly supportive. You know, when he first put up the seed funding, Make Love Not Porn, back in 2011, he asked to be anonymous. He works in finance. Sadly, it wouldn't benefit him if people know that he backed us. So that's kind of par for the course, you know, in this scenario. So I signed an NDA, sent over the pitch deck. Kylie then messaged me and said, you know, how much are you raising, at what valuation? I told her. She came back and said, you know, the client is interested. And, you know, because this is now a financial conversation, our CFO at Allset, Anthony Hoop, will pick it up. Again, we're talking fake name, but that was the name of the gentleman. So I did a call with Anthony, who said that his English was not very good, and so he would have a colleague translating. But essentially, you know, they grilled me on my business background, you know, grilled me on Make Love Not Porn, then said, you know, well, we will need to meet, you know.
At this point, Cindy, yeah. So you've had this initial meeting, and, yeah. You know, you've obviously, you've had a long career in these kind of worlds and stuff. Did they seem credible in terms of their approach and the language they spoke and the business talk they were having?
Sure. So here's the thing, Henry, it's very interesting. If there's a scam at play, it's a very good thing to be a female founder. Because when you are a female founder who faces enormous challenges raising funding, you know, you are very prone to questioning any approach that seems to play into the, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. You know, so I have to tell you that from the beginning of this dialogue, I was going, okay, where's the scam? And I literally examined everything about this scenario from every angle to identify the scam. Now, the reason I wasn't able initially to identify the scam is because in this same call, they basically said to me, we will take a 5% commission, as I say, standard. And you know what that means is that when you have the funds in your bank account, you then send us the commission. Okay, so when I'm going, where's the scam? I'm initially, having been told this, I was having trouble working out where the scam was, because unless I got the funds, they wouldn't get the funds. Now, where the scam lies, and we will come on to this, but they also said in that meeting, and we will want you to send it to us in crypto. And again, you know, not an unusual request. So I went, sure. So I then met with one of these mediators who he then connected with me on WhatsApp. He introduced himself as Matthias Roy. Again, this is a fake identity, but he purported to be a wealth manager from a company called European Holding Investments. Matthias explained that he was taking over the dialogue. He worked with the same client. He would like to meet with me in Europe. So I took a flight from Nice to Amsterdam, and I met with Matthias in a cafe and asked him to talk me through his background, which he did. You know, again, obviously, all this is fake. He asked me to talk him through the business in detail, which I did, you know, our financial projections, you know, roadmap, all of that. You know, he said, okay, you know, I'm going to take this back to our client. I said to him, I hope you get a sense of the fact that I am a person of utter principles and integrity, as is my business, and I require any investor that we work with to be the same. And so I would really like to know who this investor is, because I'm not progressing anything if I'm not, you know, fully apprised. So Matthias said, understood. The way it works is, once we can agree terms, you know, and we have a deal on the table, then we will share the investor's identity. You are free to do your due diligence. And then if you're good with it, you know, we will progress to signing. We would do that signing in person. You would meet the investor in person, blah, blah, you know, all of which sounded, you know, theoretically, you know, good practice. So, you know, Matthias said, spoken to the client. He is willing to basically put up the full amount of your round, okay, $10 million now, the balance in 12 months' time. He wants to invest anonymously. He does not want a board seat. He won't be active partner. And you know, all of this, Henry, is obviously setting off alarm bells. Okay, you know, so none of this is sounding like, but I went, okay, you know, we drop a term sheet. Rather surprisingly, they asked for a safe note. I was going, okay, that's a bit unusual in this circumstance, but obviously a safe note is better for us anyway, so fine.
Sorry, what do you mean by a safe note?
So a safe is a simple agreement for future equity.
Okay.
So, yeah, so if you invest on that basis, your investment doesn't translate into equity until the next funding. Okay. So sent this documentation over, and they sent me the ID passport scan of a gentleman called Karl Heinz Poschel. Obviously, the first thing I did was search myself, and this gentleman has very little online public presence. There's a very sketchy profile on LinkedIn, again, obviously fake, and that's now gone, by the way, because I asked him to take it down, but very little public facing. So this is where I went, right, I'm now going to have to put a lot more effort into due diligence than I would have to if this person had been like a public facing, reasonable, you know, et cetera. So the challenge I then faced, Henry, because obviously I'm working up to how we came to talk, is that, you know, Make My Report is tiny bootstrapping, has no money, and we don't have the funds to spend on professional due diligence, which, as you know, is a costly enterprise. So, you know, what I did in the first instance was, I reached out to my network saying, I have this situation, can anybody help? But unfortunately, my network is much more conventional tech entrepreneurs and, you know, VCs. And so they didn't have advice or recommendations that were to do with when you know absolutely nothing about the person whatsoever. So I you know, did my research online, and I found a Swiss private investigator. And so I emailed them and said, you know, here's the situation. I'm looking for a background check on somebody. And I specifically want to know where their funds come from. Because at this point in time, as I say, I'm still going, what's the scam? Couldn't see it. So I was now, my lens was now focused on, this looked seriously dodgy. Is this a money laundering number? You know, he'd found very little about this gentleman as well. He'd found, you know, various companies that he was supposedly associated with, which had been set up for fees of $100 in various jurisdictions and were totally not active. He said, I cannot find people of the names you cite as residents in any of these countries. You know, the website's very sketchy. And basically, he ended his report saying, you know, all of the indicators are that the funds could be illegal in some form or other. Okay. So I went, okay. And the thing too, Henry, is that, you know, I was absolutely prepared to walk away from this deal if it was a money laundering number or dodgy. You know, I don't want an arms dealer on my cap table, basically. Yeah. And so no matter how, you know, much we might need the money, you know, I was already, which is also helpful, I was already in the mindset of, I'm not necessarily going to go through with this. So that was when I you know, looked for more ways to kind of dig deeper. That obviously is how I came across you, because I was searching, I found, a terrific article on Seed Legals that, you know, one of your analysts had written. And so that was when I looked up your website, you know, emailed your analyst and said, you know, I have a situation I'd love to talk to you about. And that was when, you know, I got on a call with you. And you were terrific. And honestly, I'm recommending your service to everybody because I think you guys are fantastic and very much needed in this context as well, in a way that founders are not currently thinking about. So, you know, we spoke, and as you know, you said to me, I mean, you were very empathetic to my financial situation because I couldn't afford to hire you to do the full Monty. And you very kindly said, you know, let me take an initial look. And if I think it's worth digging deeper, you know, I'll advise you. And came back and said, look, it's looking very sketchy. And I'm not sure it's worth your money to kind of dig into more deeply into sketchiness. So, so I was already kind of, you know, really not feeling great about this. And then
this is kind of where the scam reveals itself, I guess.
Exactly. Because you and I spoke Thursday of last week. And on Friday, Matthias asked for a call. And that was when, kind of inadvertently, because I don't think he intended this to be the case, but that was when the scam revealed itself. Because, you know, he said to me, okay, great, you know, we're all ready to go. You know, we can all organize a signing. And you just have to, you know, as you know, we want our commission. You know, I went, absolutely fine. You know, he went, we're wanting crypto. I went, absolutely fine. So, and for this deal to progress, you need to show us a wallet with $500,000 in crypto ready to go. And at that point, I knew exactly what the scam was. Okay. So I went, okay, well, this is new news, Matthias. Okay. You know, first of all, you know, I don't have $500,000. I won't have it till the funds are. He was going, well, you know, to trust you, blah, blah, blah. And I will say, Henry, you know, what is entertaining about this is that these scammers did not do their due diligence with me. Because as I subsequently discovered, everyone else they've scammed have been crypto founders with access to large chunks of crypto funds. At Make Love Not Porn, we have no money. I have no money because I've put it all into Make Love Not Porn. There was no way in hell that I was ever going to be, even had I been inclined to, I was ever going to be able to deliver on the show us that amount in crypto before we, you know. So I think my response on the call made this very clear, because since that call, they've gone completely quiet. I've heard nothing more. But obviously, immediately following that call, I jumped online and I had already been researching. I've been searching startup investor funding scams, but I'd missed out the keyword, which was crypto. And the moment I found crypto, I discovered, you know, and obviously I then, you know, came back to you and sent you, you know, the reports I uncovered. I discovered that a ton of crypto founders have been scammed by, you know, I think a network of these people who have developed this template of how they operate. I think, you know, the one with the biggest loss who went public at the start of this year, Ahad Shams of Webiverse, he fell victim to putting $4 million into a wallet, showing it to this gang in, you know, the lobby of a Rome hotel. And a few minutes later, and how do they do this? They have a way of draining wallets that doesn't require the seed phrase or the password. You know, even the crypto experts they've scammed do not know how they did this. So hallelujah, you know, did not I mean, did not fall for it, could not have fallen for it. Also, you know, I'm not too bothered about it because, you know, my team at Make Not Porn can tell you, I absolutely do not bring my team on my wild fundraising ride with me because there's no point in all of us experiencing the roller coaster. And so, you know, I've said to them, you know, I will tell you where we're at with funding the day the money's in the bank, okay? Because it's, the deal's not done until the money's in the bank. But also, they will attest to the fact that I regularly say to them, you know, I will say, you know, I've got a dialogue that's progressing quite interestingly. I'm just waiting for the rug pull. Because I can tell you, life on Make Love Not Porn has been 14 years of rug pulls. So I am always waiting for the rug pull. And so I'm much more attuned to a scam, but I'm also much more able to kind of, you know, just go, okay, fine, that happened. I mean, what is not great is, obviously it was a waste of time, effort. And in our case, the cost of airfares within Europe, lawyers' fees on the contract, you know, the Swiss Prime Investigators fee, which is thousands of dollars that we can't afford to lose as a tiny bootstrapping startup. But we got out of this unscathed. But I really want to say to our listeners, you know, doing my research since, it's clear that even beyond the all male crypto founders who've come forward and said this happened to them, I think there are a ton more founders out there who have not admitted it happened to them because they're embarrassed or ashamed or, you know, devastated or whatever. I do urge anybody else with knowledge of this to speak up, because we need to make the founder community as a whole aware of this. You know, I'm also very much hoping that fellow sex tech founders and people in the adult industry have not also been scammed in this way. Because as I say, I think I was part of a blanket outreach effort to people like me, who, because of what we do, are especially challenged raising funding. That's the saga.
Well, I think that makes it all the more important to get the story out, Cindy, as you say, so that more people can be aware. Because I think, as you noted, the scam seems to have operated in the same way the whole way through. And the alarm bells ring, but if there's no money changing hands at what stage, then it's difficult to spot where their line is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this crypto wallet before the transaction happens, but supposedly you're in control of the crypto wallet, but somehow they've got this clever way of draining it. It's absolutely fascinating. And I think, you know, really speaks to the sort of, you know, how elusive and creative financial criminals can be, and the fact that they can speak exactly the language of business and know the buttons to press. So thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. I guess if you could sum up in a way any advice you have for founders and people in the space, before we sign off.
Sure. I think what I would say, Henry, is just, you know, if a mysterious investor appears who seems too good to be true, ask yourself, where's the scam? And just operate that dialogue on that basis. And just one useful little tip, which I subsequently discovered. When you are approached by somebody who claims to be a representative with ostensibly a presence on the web, a website, go to scamadvisor.com and enter that URL, which I only did for both allsetconsulting.io and European Holding Investments after the event. Scamadvisor.com told me both of those websites were only 4 months old. They were deeply untrustworthy. So I would say, ask yourself, where's the scam? Any websites, put them into scamadvisor.com, and any sketchy LinkedIn profiles, that's a really bad sign.
Fantastic. Well, Cindy, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a really fascinating story, and I'm glad you weren't more burnt than you were on this occasion, obviously. And I think, you know, great to break cover and sort of share the story so that more people can be aware of it.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure to do that. And also, Henry, I do want to say that I so appreciated randomly finding you online and connecting with you and being able to talk to you, because I think what you're doing at Themis is a fantastic service for founders. And as I say, I'll recommend you to everybody I know, because this is a service we need in a way that most founders don't actually think about.
Well, that's really kind. And, you know, we really enjoy supporting business. So that's fantastic to know. Thanks so much, Cindy.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Themis Podcasts. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to find out more about Themis, please do contact us via our website at wearethemis.com or drop us an email at info@wearethemis.com. Thank you.